So just to sort of get up to speed where what we've been looking at, where we're at, both for the sake of those who've joined us since lunch, but also as an excuse to remind the rest of us what we've where we've travelled. We started by looking at Ephesians 4, 1 to 16, which gives us a vision of what the church should be like. And I explained that in terms of four statements, I am, and how do we view ourselves. And we saw from Ephesians 4 that I am someone who's part of Christ's body. I see myself as part of the church. I am someone who's committed to the unity, preserving the unity of that church. Then I am given gifts by Christ to serve in a unique way and, you know, to contribute in a unique way in the growth of that church. And then fourthly, I'm someone who is to care for the other members of the church. And as I said in that first session, we're looking more at sort of what does the Bible teach, and I promise in this session it'll be briefer and we'd be looking more directly at how that applies to our situation. Okay, but still obviously with some Bible teaching. And then Avian helped us set the background in the second session by interviewing us as elders, and you ask questions just to get a feel for what role we play as elders and where the rest of the church fit in, how that relates to what you do. And I think we've been sort of honing in on these two areas of gifts and service. That's the one area. What do we do? How do we work? And the other sort of pastoral care. How do we care for one another? Okay, so trying to hone in on those two, and I've just got two headings for this session. The first one is working as a body, and the second one is caring as a body. Okay, working and caring. One common way for churches to describe what, this is the first heading, working as a body. One common way for churches to decide what ministries, what activities to run, goes like this. I know I'm setting up a straw man, but there's more than a grain of truth in it. It tends to go like this. The church has had a number of ministries that it's run for years. And if you ask the question, why do we do these things? The answers will tend to be along the following lines. Well, surely every sound evangelical church does such and such. That's one answer. Or another answer could be, well, let me think, about 20 years ago, there was a real need for such and such a group. And at that point, we had people who were really gifted in that area. And so we started running this ministry then. And, well, having started it, we've just carried on doing it. For others, an answer might be, some other churches, well, the church down the road runs such and such a group, and it seems really to work well for them, so we thought we ought to copy them and run one as well. So you end up with this sort of group of activities, this sort of set of ministries going on, and then what happens is in every church, people get frail, people get ill, people leave the area, and the church leaders, or those running the activity, frantically search around for someone to fill the gaps they've left. You know, they're picking names. They say, oh, Ben and Catherine just joined the church. Great, we'll ask them to do such and such. There's a gap there. You see, so, and then they reply, hold on a minute, Fred really isn't any good with children. Well, never mind, we need someone in the Sunday school, and at least he's sound, he's reliable, he's the best we've got, so come on, we better use him there. And so in many churches, there are both a lot of square pegs rammed into round holes, and there are also a lot of other shaped pegs left lying on the side, because even with the wildest stretch of imagination, their gifts don't really seem to fit into any of the existing holes. And so nobody's really got any idea how they could possibly use them in the work of the church. It's a straw man, but I think there's more than a grain of truth in it. So is that really how the Bible teaches us to decide what ministries we run and who serves where? Well, under this heading of working as a body, I've just got four sub-points. You know, I've got to smuggle in a few. And the first one is this. Gifts should determine activities, not activities gifts. Gifts should determine activities, not activities gifts. Turning to 1 Corinthians 12, the fundamental truth that this chapter is built on is that the gifts we have in the church are given by God. Chapter 12, verses 4 to 7, now there are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are varieties of service, but the same Lord. There are varieties of activities, but it is the same God who empowers them all in everyone. To each is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. And then verse 18, which I think is really striking. You know, we've been told God gives the gifts. Verse 18, but as it is, God arranged the members in the body, each one of them, as he chose. God arranged the members in the body, each one of them, as he chose. And in the context, that's talking about the different gifts that God's given to the members of the church. So verse 18 is telling us not only, which I think we'd all sign up to, that it's God who gifts us and God who empowers us, but it's telling us in verse 18 that God's arranged things exactly as he wants them. God has put, coming down to 2014 in Newtown, because that's where we are, God has given exactly the gifts that he and his infinite wisdom knows that this church needs to do the work that he has for us in 2014. Now, it's clear then, if we take a step on from that, that in the New Testament there are certain gifts that every church must have. Every church, as we were thinking this morning, Garrett Sampson, must have elders, must have appointed leaders who have teaching and leadership gifts. If you haven't got people who can fulfill that role, you can't really have a church. But if you go beyond that, there aren't many ministries that you would say every church must run one of those. So we need a completely different mindset from saying we must run this activity because we always have, or we must run that activity because they run one and we must. We should rather look round the church and say, what gift has God in his infinite wisdom and according to his sovereign will placed in this church, and then work out what ministries, what activities we should run in the light of that. The gifts should determine the activities, not the activities, the gifts. Just give you an example. A friend who's a minister of a church down on the south coast, and they've got people in the church who are amazingly gifted at sign language, and so they've got a ministry, with a very effective ministry in their church, only a small church, reaching out to people who are hearing impaired in the area. Not every church has got people with those gifts, so not every church would run that sort of ministry. When we start to think in that way, it means that we need to be prepared to review what activities we run, because the gifts in a church are forever changing. People come, people go. Those who stay grow in their faith, develop gifts. Maybe they grow older and frailer, and there are probably people in this church in the 70s, 80s who 40 years ago were running youth work, but now it's not really their thing. That happens. And because the gifts that are available in a church are changing, that means the ministries we run should be changing. So to come bang up to date, if Stephen and Hare are moving on in the summer, that does not mean that we compile a detailed list of what has Stephen and Hare been doing, and then we frantically search around and say, look, we must find people to do that and that and that, because we've got to carry on exactly what we were doing before. It may be that God has supplied people with suitable gifts so that some of those ministries carry on. It may be that God is saying that some of those ministries were for a time, and he wants us now to do different things because he's supplied different people with different gifts. So what have we said? Working as a body, gifts should determine activities, not activities, gifts. And secondly, everyone is needed, or God doesn't make mistakes. Verses 14 to 17 address those who feel inferior, who feel they've got nothing to offer, who say, well, this church seems to do a lot of youth work. I couldn't do youth work. I don't fit in. Or whatever it is. Listen to verses 14 to 17. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would be the sense of smell? So Paul's saying, look, you are a member of the church, full stop, even if you're an ear rather than an eye. But then he's saying, look, the church needs a whole variety of gifts. And then he goes on to say, and God has arranged the members in the body, each one of them as he chose. So the gifts that you have were given you by God, and it was his plan that you would be living in Newtown in 2014, and that you would be part of this church, and you have just the right gifts for doing what God sees to be done, sees needs to be done now. But you might say, but I don't think I've got any gifts. Well, Paul addresses that in verses 21 following. There he's speaking directly to those who feel superior. But as Paul speaks to them, he indirectly addresses those who are crying out, well, I just haven't got anything to offer. Because what he says, this is my third sub-point, those who seem weaker are indispensable. Listen, verse 21-22. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, the parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And Paul simply making the observation that with some parts of the body it's obvious what they do. We all know what our eyes do, we all know what our ears do. But there are lots of other parts of the body where unless you've studied medicine, you probably don't even know they're there until they go wrong. And then you discover that they're absolutely indispensable if your body's to work properly. And he says it's the same as that in the church. You know, some of us have gifts that, you know, a first-time visitor coming into the church would say, oh, well, it's obvious what he does or it's obvious what she does. Because maybe they stand up at the front or whatever. Other people, they might look at and think, well, I don't know if they're playing any part in the church. But actually, if they joined the church and got to know what went on, they discovered that that person had an indispensable role. It's just behind the scenes. So we've all got something vital to play, all got a vital part to play. What are my gifts? Well, we'll be looking at that directly in the next few minutes, after I finish speaking. But I just want to make one practical point before we move on to the second heading of caring as a body, and that is, to my fourth sub-point here, is working for God does not necessarily mean running activities. Working for God does not necessarily mean running activities. You know, it's tempting for churches to take the attitude that you're only really involved in the church if your name appears on a rota, or you're actually involved running some activity. But that's not true. Take one example in the Ephesians passage we looked at earlier. Paul referred as some are evangelists. You know, some people have a real gift for being out there in the world, getting alongside people at their place of work or in some social activity, and just sharing their faith informally. Some people are just phenomenally gifted like that. They're evangelists. Now, if you've got somebody who's great at that, you don't want to tie up all their time saying, for sake of argument, let's appoint them to help the treasurer with looking after the money. You want them to say to them, no, look, don't worry about running loads of activities at church. You get out there and spend time with your friends in the world, because you've got a real gift for sharing your faith. But if that is you, then you also need to be feeding back to us, hey, look, I was talking to so-and-so yesterday about my faith, please pray for me, or I'm meeting with such-and-such on. Okay? So for many of us, our gifts will involve helping run activities in the church, and we'll be looking at that in the very last session today, but certainly not for us all. So that was looking at sharing in the work. My second point is looking at how we care for one another spiritually. So caring as a body. One of the major things we discovered that Stephen's been doing, when we were looking before lunch, is overseeing the pastoral care of the church. And as we've seen, a good deal of elders' time is devoted to this area. A lot of people in the church have had a lot of pastoral visits from one or other or several elders over the last 3 years since Stephen's been with us. That is great. But as I think we were reflecting this morning, there is no way we can keep up that model of care with just one elder working full-time, Paul giving a fair bit of time to the church, Geraint and Dan having strictly limited amount of time they can give because of their jobs and so on. But as I was trying to argue this morning, biblically we don't have to keep up that model. The Bible doesn't say all the care in the church is to be done by the elders. Some of the verses I read this morning, just to read them again. Ephesians 4, verse 15. Rather speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ. That's all of us speaking the truth in love. Colossians 3:16, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom. Hebrews 3:12-13, take care, brothers, lest there be in any of you an evil, unbelieving heart, leading you to fall away from the living God, but exhort one another every day, as long as it is called today, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. And Hebrews 10:24, let us consider how to stir one another to love and good works. Now, praise God, there's a lot of that sort of care happening already. By the nature of it, you probably aren't aware of much of it. How are you going to know if A has been supporting B? Some of it, I imagine, we as elders aren't even aware of. Every so often I hear that X has been faithfully visiting Y for some time, and I didn't know about it. I've only just come to know about it, but it's been going on for a while. And that's great, because you don't have to keep the elders informed of every conversation you have with a fellow church member. I'm not saying you should tell us that. I'm just saying it's great that there's a lot of this goes on, and it's fine that we don't know about it. So we arrive at a model of pastoral care where we're all involved in that care, but where the elders have a responsibility to oversee it, to ensure that there aren't any gaps. Acts 20 verse 28 says, pay careful attention to yourselves and to all the flock of which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to care for the church of God, which he obtained with his own blood. So the practical question I think we face is, how do we, as elders, oversee the pastoral care of the church when we shouldn't be aware of a lot of what's going on? Because it's just a visiting B, or talking to so-and-so when they bump into them in town, and how you get, a real problem with such-and-such. Oh, well, I was reading this in my quiet time this morning and it really spoke to me. I think this might be relevant. You know, how do we oversee it when we don't know what's going on? Well, to use a medical analogy, I may not be aware that you have been going to the doctor, but I can tell if you've been receiving appropriate and effective treatment by simply asking, are you well? So the elders may not be aware that another church member has been teaching, admonishing you, or exhorting you, or stirring you up to love and good works. But we can tell if you've been appropriately cared for by asking the simple question, are you spiritually healthy? If not, then we as elders have a responsibility to personally intervene or to ask somebody else to do so. Now, what's that going to look like in practice? Well, just what I want to do now is just, in the last 5 minutes, sketch that out. But I'm well aware this is a big idea and it will take a while to sink in. So over the coming months, before Steve moves, at various intervals, I'll sort of re-sketch it out, as it were. So stage one in the pastoral care is just go on and care for one another spiritually as the New Testament commands. You don't have to ask for permission. Is it okay if I share with so-and-so? Go on and do it. Secondly, refreshments after services and fellowship lunches provide opportunities for us to get to know one another and so to become aware of needs. Occasional church social events help that as well. And remember that the New Testament, Romans 12:10, says that we're all to seek to show hospitality. You see, the bottom line is you can't care for other people if you don't know them well enough to know what their needs are. So we've tried to factor into the church life occasions when you can just talk to people over tea or coffee, get to know them, and become to be aware of what their needs are. Thirdly, and I say I'm just stating this, I'll fill it in later at another occasion, we want to encourage the older Christians, that's older in the faith, not necessarily in years, to meet up with younger Christians, younger in the faith, one-to-one, on a regular basis to simply read through the Bible with them or to read a good Christian book together. So to try and encourage older Christians to personally say, I'll meet with a younger Christian to regularly to support them. Fourthly, we're planning come the autumn to link everyone into a home group or some other small group to facilitate this. As I said this morning, if absolutely everybody on our prayer diary turned up to a service, which has never happened, there would be the best part of 200 people attending on a Sunday, including all the children. It's hard to be aware of what is going on in the lives of that number of people, let alone to care for that number of people. And if you're new to a body that size, you can feel like, nobody knows me here, and no one's aware of what's going on in my life. It helps if you can belong to a smaller group that gives you a sort of a group to relate to within that larger body. And our basic small group structure is the home groups. You could add to that the ladies' meeting. And so we want everyone to be linked to the home group, so the home groups become a focus for looking out for one another spiritually. That there's a smaller group there who know you and know you belong to this group and facilitate that getting to know one another. I know some of the frail elderly find attending those difficult, and we can't expect them to do that, so we must look out for them specially, and Paul has particular gifts in that area of caring for some of the frailer members of the fellowship. But from the autumn, we want the home groups to be the structure whereby everyone belongs to a smaller group who will look out for one another. So sub-point, as it were, is please don't complain if others seem unaware of your needs if you don't make use of the opportunity to get close to them. If you always make a dive for the door the instant the service finishes, you never stay to a fellowship lunch, you never attend a home group, you never come to any of the church social events, well then you can't be surprised that other people don't know you and don't know what your needs are. So fifthly, we will then rely more on the home group leaders to keep us as elders informed, in the sense of, look, if there is a particular need that really needs some help from the elders in addressing. And then the elders will keep, with that help of the home group leaders, keep trying to keep a feel for what's going on in the whole fellowship, what the needs are, and then either trying to address them ourselves or asking other more mature Christians to do so. As I said, we're going to spell out those ideas more in the coming weeks and months, because I know it takes a while to get new ideas across. But for today, we want people to get hold of the big idea, which is that we all have a responsibility to teach and exhort one another according to the Bible. It's not just a job for the elders. We have a responsibility to oversee it, but we're not expected, according to the Bible, to do it all. Okay, let's pray.